Thank you for keeping the flies alive.
Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop would like to send a big shout out to the First Lady of Hip Hop, MC Sha-Rock. Sharon Jackson, as a pioneering female, you set a standard and opened doors. We may never fully gauge the depth of your influence on hip hop as a culture. Salute with full honors, Queen Sha-Rock.
So nice, so that's what I like. Is that
I say it here, how can you just don't stop it and just get ready to jam? The Disco Daddy Wide World of Hip Hop Radio Show. Every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, only on VibeLive.com, with special guests every week. Don't miss it.
Hello out there. Welcome to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And we're really rolling today. We've got our second show and nothing but legendary iconic figures from hip hop telling their stories and for history, because this is the only genre of music where some of the founders are still living, male and female. And we've got one of the originators. If you want to go back as far as you want to go back into hip-hop, as far as recorded music is concerned, this lady and her two friends were one of the first, probably the first female rap group in hip-hop, actually before it was even called hip-hop. So she's got a unique story to tell of what's been happening with her and her friends since then. And her name is Cheryl the Pearl, okay, from the group Sequence. She's got a lot going on in her life. Cheryl, are you with me?
Yes, I am, and thank you for inviting me to your show. I appreciate
We want to welcome you. I'm going to shut up. I'm going to let you talk, but I just want to give you some guidelines because people want to hear your whole story.
Okay.
I myself was surprised a few years ago to see you on Facebook because you always wonder, what happened to so-and-so? What happened? You know, we don't have Jet and Ebony magazine anymore to keep us informed like they used to. You know what I'm saying? So we have the internet now. Okay, so you got a beautiful story, Cheryl the Pearl, on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Go on, Cheryl.
Okay, I started in 1979 with my group, The Sequence. We're the first female rap group to be on Wax. And over the years, there's been, you know, a lot of female groups that have stepped up to the plate. And they were there back then. They just didn't beat us to Wax. We just got that chance before anyone else at Sugar Hill Records.
You weren't from New York City.
No, we were not from New York City. We no idea what was going on in New York. From Columbia, South Carolina. So all we heard was the first rap record we heard was from the Fatback Band with King Tim III. And we heard Lady B out of Philadelphia. And then we heard the Sugar Hill Gang. And
what,
then,
years? What years? What years were these influences?
1979.
Beautiful. Okay, you heard those.
1979. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's no internet. There's no internet. There's no video, so you couldn't even see those groups.
No.
But you hear the records. Okay.
You can only hear the records on the radio. And before them, Disco Daddy, it was Parliament Funkadelic. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a big fan of George Clinton. And
I'm
they
with
had
you.
T-Funk out.
Right.
Good evening.
Right.
Do not attempt to adjust this radio. There is nothing wrong. That is where I got the rap style from.
Really?
I played that record so much, my mother and my sister, and they hid it from me. I would put the needle on the record and push it back until I could say every word that he was saying. And so we were cheerleaders at our school, and so me and Angie used to write cheers for our school. And then we heard the Sugar Hill Gang was coming to South Carolina to the Township Auditorium. So me and Angie had been already writing songs and putting things together. And I wrote the hook of Funk You Up. I think I was like 16 or 17 years old because besides George, I was a Bootsy Collins fan as well. Boosie was doing his thing. And Boosie would have been coming in and out. And this girl said, well, she was dating him when he came to South Carolina. I said, well, I'm going to write something for him. And I started writing that hook really for Boosie to hear, but he never got a chance to hear it.
Yeah.
And so when we met Ms. Robinson at the Township Auditorium, first we couldn't get in. We was promised passes that was not there. And Harold Miles, God bless his soul, saw us standing out there telling the people, we're supposed to be in, we got to get in, you know, we got to get back there. And so he came to the door and he said, what's going on with y'all? And he was an older man, of course, and he had the Sugar Hill jacket on. So we're like, we're supposed to get back there. We're supposed to have backstage passes. You know, nobody won't let us in. And he said, he was looking at Andy because he said, I like that little chocolate thing right there. So Andy said, well, if you get me, he was flirting with Andy. So Andy said, if you get me in, you got to get my girls in. He said, all three of y'all, come on. And then as we were walking to the backstage part of the auditorium, we was telling him that we sing and we rap and we need somebody to hear us. So he said, come on. And he introduced us to Nate Edmonds, God bless his soul. And Nate was telling us to send a cassette, send a tape, and giving us an address. We was like, now, somebody got to hear us now. And so Ms. Robinson, Sylvia Robinson, was sitting back there in the room. And we like, what could be those boys rapping? You got to hear us, you know. I mean, really expressing ourselves to try to get anybody to hear us. And she said, sitting in the corner, she said, I'll listen to y'all.
Wow.
And, you know, and we was like.
That right there. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you've got to, I'm sure you've thought about it many times, but how fortunate is that? Three cheerleaders from South Carolina make it backstage to a concert, but Sylvia Robinson, who started, for people out there who don't know the history, started Sugar Hill Records, is standing in the room.
And
listen,
there.
It's nice to listen to you guys. Go ahead.
She had been on the bus with the guy. She had her Sugar Hill jacket on and her cap on, and she didn't have any makeup on. So, of course, I'm a big fan of Sylvia Robinson and Pillow Talk. So, but I still didn't recognize her.
Pillow Talk cover, she's always got her makeup and all that. But you probably look the same.
So I didn't recognize her. So and then even the name didn't even hit me, you know. And so we started singing, and we were singing, and we were singing songs that we wrote. And it didn't quite hit her. And on our way out, I said, well, we need to sing Funk You Up to her. And she said, come on back in and sing it. And we started, funk you right on up. We're going to funk you right on up. Get up, sit back down. And she said, don't say no more. She sent for the band members, which was Doug Wimplish, I think, and Keith LeBlanc and Skip McDonald. She told them to come in, Sugar Hill Gang Band members to come in. And she said, start singing. She said, y'all say y'all rap, right? And y'all rap. We said, yes, ma'am. She started singing that hook again, and we started singing. And then the bass came in, and the guitar started playing, and the drummer was beating on. I think he was beating on the wall. And we started singing. Then she said, Blondie, you come in. And Gwen said, my name is Gwen, but they call me Blondie. I'm better. And she hadn't heard the rest till we started singing them. And she said, oh, my God. And she said, Cheryl, you come in. They call me Cheryl. I tell you why, because I got the sexy bedroom time. And then she said, Angie, you come in. Say, Angie, B is the what they say. I got chocolate. It's in the Milky Way. And everybody backstage ran to that room because it became like a jam session. Nobody wanted to stop, but it was time
that
for the Sugar Hill
Gang. That is the most amazing, sir. I'm sorry, I'm going to let you continue, but that is the most amazing hip-hop story. And I've interviewed a lot of hip-hop artists that I have ever heard in my life. That's a hell of a movie moment. If you can see that scene in the movie,
you can see,
I mean, you got something
there.
Well, I'm glad you're on the show telling that story, because that is one of the most amazing hip hop discovery stories I've ever heard. You got a hell of a story. Go ahead, sister.
Yeah, straight out of high school, and then it was time for the Chevelle Gang to go on stage, and she was so excited about us, and we went on the stage. We asked, can we go on the stage with them? Because now we're in South Carolina and all of our friends are out there in the audience. So now we need to hit that stage so they can see us. We done told them we was coming. She said, yeah, y'all go out there. Go on out there. And I loved her attitude about it. And she watched us on stage performing with the Sugar Hill Gang.
Wow.
And everybody in the audience, everybody from South Carolina, is like, they on stage with the Chevelle Gang. Oh, my God. You know, that was the talk of the town. Everybody in our school, oh, we got crazy respect and love behind that one. And at the end of the night, she said, I'm going to stand for you girls, and I'm going to make you stars. Those were her words. And we looked at her, and we like, I wonder if she's playing or not, you know, because people tell you things and they don't really do it, you
right.
know. And, but there was a look in her face when they were leaving, and she turned and said it again. She said, you're going to be stars. She said, I'm going to send for y'all next Thursday. I'm going to send you tickets there next Thursday, and Friday y'all get on the plane. Make sure you got your ID. Now we got to go back home and explain to our parents what they
would
get ready to do for us.
Ooh,
so
man.
I went to my grandmother, because my grandmother has had the final say. So, you know, even though my mother was like, I don't think she goes, my mother said, let her go. If it doesn't work, then she can always come back home. And my grandfather.
So none of you were 18 at the time for signing for yourself.
I was 18. Now, the thing is with the sequence is, the night that we got discovered was Blondie's birthday. Blondie was 19, turning 20 that October the 20th.
Oh, okay.
On my birthday is when we heard our record on the radio. I was 18, turning 19, November the 19th. And when we met up with the Sugar Hill Gang in Charleston, South Carolina, it was on Angie's birthday, which she turned 18 December the 18th.
So you were able to sign the contracts yourself then at that age. Okay.
Yes. And our parents.
Fortunate is that. It's like the stars are lined up for you all the way down, just a yellow brick road for you all to walk down, all the way to New York.
That. Yes, 5-2, 5-3, 5-4. We just had the combination there. Mm-hmm. And Angie was 17 when we signed. So, you know, that's, you know, so many years ago, but she was 17 going on 18. And we had to talk her moms into letting her go. And Blondie said, I'm 20, I'm going. You know, it's like, I'm going to leave y'all. So my mom, my grandfather gave me $100 and said, if it don't work, get on the bus and come back home. But also had relatives that lived in East Orange, New Jersey at the time, my aunts and uncles.
Right.
So if things didn't go right, then I was to call them, and they would come and get us. And I think Angie had family in Brooklyn. Her aunt lived in Brooklyn. So, our first time really being alone in a state with people that we really don't know, but they want to record us. So we got on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the airport. Harold, the same guy that met us at the door, picked us up at the airport. We went to the studio, met Ms. Robinson at the studio, and the band was in there rehearsing the song. She gave us $100 apiece, told us to go get something to eat, and drop our luggage off at the hotel and come back. And so we go to McDonald's with $100 bill, each of us. And we want 2 all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, chicken onions on a separate feed bar. And she's looking at us like, what are they in here with $100 bills for a Big Mac?
But you in the big time now, though. You're in the big time. And you guys go in. What was the creative process like? Did you have to? She wanted obviously the same song, but she probably was more ready with the band members now because she had heard the hook and everything. So how did that play out when you go back
once
and start recording?
Once we went back to the studio, we went in and we rehearsed with the gang, with the band, the Sugar Hill Band, and they basically had it down. In fact, they're professionals. And so we were singing it down for them, and then they started recording the track first. So as we're singing to them, they're recording the track. And once they finish, and you know, back then we was doing 6, 7, 8 minute tracks. You know what I'm saying? Because once you got in the groove of everything, you didn't want to stop the music from playing. So, you know, you'll notice that the Sugar Hill long version of Rapper's Delight is 14 minutes or something. And I think Funk You Up is like 6, 7, or 8 minutes. It's very long. And so they did their parts, and then they came back in and they did touch-ups where they needed to do touch-ups. Then they needed for us to put the vocals on it so that the band could come in and whatever they felt in and out of there they could do. So we did the vocals. She was very, very happy. She had this big old pretty smile on her face. And everybody was just so happy. And we went in at 8 o'clock that night. It was like 12 or 1 o'clock the next day when we got out. But everything was basically done that night, the touch-ups and everything. But she told us to go get some rest, and they would pick us up around 6 or 7, and we would come back because of some of the things that she wanted to do. And I was like, what else can they do? It's basically bad, you know. But that's young and not really knowing the production side of it, of what a producer hears that can make it even better. So Keith LeBlanc came back in the next day, and the little sounds would hear, boom, 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 boom. He came in with that, the drummer. And then one of the other guys, his name was Flip at the time, he came in and said, sit your booty down, which made it interesting. Okay. And when we had to do the hand claps.
Okay, I know. With that, that's friends, we to the studio. That's the hardest thing. Most people take that for granted. It's the most monotonous. And it's the hardest thing because if one person do it, and one person's off, you know, you got to sort of tighten up on it. But then the hand clap. So that was the last thing that you added besides the.
That was the last thing we had to do because, you know, there weren't any mechanical hand claps back then.
Right.
You had to
do
it yourself.
No, I did mine in 1980, 81. Yeah, we did them again. That's work.
Okay. So
most of the people out there in radio land, if you ever record a record with hand claps, now if you try to do them by hand, you understand why these artists that we're talking to, these iconic legends, put work in, not just on the stage when you saw them in person, but in the studio. Okay.
Right.
So that's why we illuminate that process. So you guys cut the record. And at that point, the record is done. It's still a dream, however. So what does it progress to, radio airplay and all of that?
Once Ms. Robinson mastered it and sent it to the master company and they sent the plates back, she sent it to Mr. Frankie Crocker at WBLS and Mr. Magic at that time. We went and we did an interview with Mr. Frankie Crocker at WBLS. And him and Andy's birthday is December 18th. God bless his soul. But he did open that door for us to come in and do that, and which he really didn't
he
like
was
it
the man.
That time. But he was the man in New York.
Yes, he was.
And
He's my idol. He's why I became a DJ. I grew up in New York.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then we went to see Mr. Magic. God bless his soul. He passed on also. And we did the interview with Mr. Magic. And I met Jaleel from Houdini with Mr. Magic. He was an intern there at that time.
Wow.
And then we got homesick, and we wanted to go back home.
Of course.
So we came back home after being up there for a couple of weeks. Right. And when we heard it on the radio at WOIC, was the radio station at the time, when we heard it on the radio, everybody called each other, it's on the radio, it's on the radio. We heard it. I said, oh, my God, turn the radio on. Call Gwen, call me, turn the radio. So we were all on the phone while the music was playing.
I did that feeling, too, It's magic. Yes. It's a magic feeling. Yes, it is.
Yeah, so we just was like so happy. Our friends was hearing it, our family was hearing it, and they know that, you know, something big was getting ready to happen for us. And so after a month of hearing it down there, you know, the churches came up against it, and they didn't want it played on the radio.
Really?
So, yes.
Really?
Yes, they didn't really like
it. And there's no bad words in hip-hop at this point, at the time you record your record, which is 1980. Nobody's doing the B-words or the N-words. What was the problem?
I think when we were saying funk you up, the kids were saying something else.
Okay, I see. Little semantic thing. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
it wasn't really anything. Okay.
Yes.
But that's interesting.
Yes, and so, but they still played it for a little while, and then the nightclubs picked up, and that was it. Once the clubs picked up, it was gone. Yeah, it was out the card. And then, like I said, we met the Sugar Hill Gang in Charleston, South Carolina. We did that show with them, and our whole family drove down with us to see us off. After that show, we got on the bus with the Sugar Hill Gang. And we traveled with them for, I think, 6 months to a year. We were on and off. We would go out. But we never got back home for a long time after that. We went.
Wow.
We would go everywhere they went. And they was teaching us how to be on the stage and be professional. And to master the craft.
Work it down, everything.
And so we were on for a long time before Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, the Funky Four Plus One, the Treacherous Three, the Crash Crew, Spoony G, Busy B, Wayne and Charlie, the Mean Machine, which were the first Puerto Rican rappers at that time. The whole clique, Kevin Kev, all of us traveled together. It was like three buses that they put us on, and we hit the road. We hit the road. I think we traveled. We worked off of Funk You Up for 2 years.
I know you did. Okay.
Hey, that's how
did you go overseas? Did you go overseas to get a chance to do any of that?
We only went to Canada. We didn't get to go to the other places. The Sugar Hill Gang basically opened up that door for Flash and the rest of them to be able to go over there. But at that time, we didn't get to go. So people are still waiting to see the sequence over there.
Okay.
You know, and you know, Angie now is Angie Stone, but she's the original Angie B from the sequence. And every now and when her and Blondie travel over there, Blondie was telling me, she said, sure, Angie got the hottest record on the map, but they're coming to us to get autographs from the sequence work. Mm-hmm. And some of them got me and Angie's autograph, but they waiting on you to come so that they can get yours. And I was like, for real? The best thing in God? You know? She said,
well, let me ask you. Let me ask you. You know, now you're a mature artist that overseas, all black groups that are taken for granted here now would be megastars over there. So is there any talk of reuniting to do a European tour, Japan or Europe or places where you know you would be booked, you know what I'm saying, and be welcome? Have you guys thought about that?
I talked to Blondie and Angie about a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying something about China. And but I haven't heard anything else back from them or whether we were going to do that or not.
Keep us informed. Please keep us informed.
Yeah.
You got fans here who would love to see that. Even if you only did occasional get-togethers for specific things, you know what I'm saying? Because maybe all of you now, like myself, I'm a grandfather. I spend time touring. It's not something I really would like to get locked into, but for certain dates, 3 or 4 dates here or there, you know what I'm saying? Or
right.
Size of the city, something like that, a special thing where you know in advance that the promoter has already got you sold out there. Bam.
Right.
You know, it's something to let us know if it happens.
I think once it presents itself, we will do it. We'll probably, you know, talk about and discuss it. And we will do it. I know Angie is working on a new album right now. And I have a new single out there, in which they said it's doing very good in London, in Brazil, in China, and Australia.
Tell us about this new project. I'm going to take you back after this, but tell us about the new project and Rhythm Change right now while we're in the middle of our conversation.
Well, you know, when I stepped out of the industry many years ago, I stepped away because I had to come back and take care of my grandparents. And my sisters, you know, between the two of them had 5 kids, which were babies at the time. And my grandfather said, please make sure these kids come up. So I ended up staying home, being auntie mom and helping my sisters with the kids. And mama and my grandmother and grandfather passed on. And but I was still recording. And so I had this song called Rhythm Change that I did with a producer here in South Carolina. I call him L.A., but his name is Lamont Kennedy. And me and him would go in and we would record Rhythm Change. Mm-hmm. And I did Got Love and I Don't Feel Like Talking, two other songs that I'll be releasing. And Lonnie and I did On Our Way to the Movies. But I kept holding on to my music and doing my research on the industry and actually watching all of the awards, watching where they were going at with the music. And I decided that, you know, I write, sing, rap, and produce. I'm going to be on some rap stuff, too. But I wanted to put the song out of mine called Rhythm Change. And I went to Facebook first with it. And I just started getting such great response from it. And you know, a lot of people that was in radio and doing things kept saying, sure, can I get it? Can I play it on my radio station? I said, of course. So I would send it to anyone who asked for it. And I have a record pool that I work with, a couple of them that I work with, and they start pushing it. And then think about 2 weeks ago, it was number 4 on the charts, on the urban hip-hop Latin charts, and number 2 on the indie charts. And this week here, it went up to number 3 on the urban hip-hop Latin charts. So I'm
Where can your fans and people who are just learning about you go to purchase your music right now?
It's in iTunes and Apple's. It should be on any of the online stores. They put it in all of the online stores.
Pearl of Pearl, Rhythm Change. Okay, now I do want to take you back. You had a glory fairy tale beginning with Sugar Hill Records. It took some twists and turns. Can you elaborate on any of that and give some advice to young people getting into this business?
Okay. Well, I would say there, you know, as you know, we were kids and we had no business sense, I put it like that, because we're coming straight out of high school. And the paperwork that we signed kind of binded us up to the point where the publishing from the song, we never really got anything from that. So we're in the courtrooms. We're going to be going to, I guess, to try to lawyers. We're lawyered up now. And this is years later after seeing so many people touch our music and no money coming in.
Okay.
So, and even Bruno Mars, I got 2, Funk You Up and Apache. Apache was the song I wrote with the Sugar Hill Gang. They have those 2 songs on Uptown Funk You Up. Jennifer Lopez used Eighth Wonder, which I was a part of Eighth Wonder and one of the writers on that song as well.
Wow.
And this song called I'm Gonna Be Alright. So Master P has used Eighth Wonder sample. Make them say, na 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 na. That sample come from some of my work, Busta Rhymes, Woo-ha, I got them all in check. That's some of my work from the Sugar Hill Gang, Eighth Wonder. And people are constantly touching the old music. which keeps me alive and makes me say, okay, well, if they touch that, they better get ready for round two because I'm loaded. The song they hear now, Rhythm Change, is 8 years old.
Wow. Okay.
I just hold them, you know?
Right on, right on.
Yeah.
Now, is there any further thought on an album or project besides what we talked about, possible reunion, possibly with the girls? From
yes.
Sequence, but any, but basically, what do you want to do as a solo career artist? What are your goals?
I'm working on an album now. The name of my label is Black Bottom Entertainment, so all of my music would come through my label. I've opened a label up for new artists to come through, and I have some really, really great people that's got great music that I'm going to be pushing out there. I do 50-50 deals on record sales and merchandise. People keep their publishing. I'm not interested in that, nor do I manage anyone. They just submit the music to blackbottoment@yahoo.com. I listen to it, and if they got something, you know, we work it out and we go with it, you know, all the way out with it. I'm going to be doing a lot of my work. I think I'm going to work till I turn 60, then I'm going to retire. Come out to California with y'all that.
Why stop? I'm not going to give my age away, but I'm still cooking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I mean, you do what you love.
And you know what, Disco? Daddy, I hate when they put an age limit on music. I don't like that.
Yeah. Right.
I don't like that. I want to hear Gladys Knight. I want to hear Millie Jackson. I want to hear Miss Aretha Franklin. I want to hear them. Even if they don't travel the world like they used to when they were younger.
No.
I want to hear their voices.
Yes, because they are more than
Donna Ross. I want to hear Shaka Khan. I want to hear those the real gut music.
I got you. Quincy Jones, 90-something years old, tell him he can't make music anymore.
They don't do that with the Rolling Stone and some of those great groups.
Oh, heck no. My man looking like he stepped out of the coffin, Nick Jagger. He's still selling out concerts.
He's still selling out concerts. So why should they stifle our people?
Exactly.
And then they holler, grown people don't have concerts for grown people to go. Well, then let the grown people get back out there. The ones that want to go out there and work, let them work. Quit that box sign on that stop sign to saying we don't want you no more. Because that's what that says to me, and that makes me want to get it, want to really dig in and let you know I'm going to do what I do. I am who I am. You're not going to stop me. You can only open the doors and let me come through. If not, I'm going in every hood and sell my music.
On that note, you heard from Sean the Pearl, a very assertive queen.
I'm not afraid of it, you know.
There you go. She's out to get her. Right on. And we want your legal problems to straighten out to benefit you and the ladies, because we all know some of the horror stories of the early beginnings. We all had stars in our eyes.
Right.
I got stories to tell too, all right, similar to yours. So, you know, I appreciate artist to artist your contribution, Cheryl the Pearl, the hip hop and the ladies sequence, okay, your place in history. Period.
Thank you.
I appreciate, because for females in any profession, you've got to forgive the pun, a hard row to hoe. You know what I'm saying? You're from the country, so you know I'm not meaning it in the way that they would take it in the city. You know, there people work with farm implements, and you get them from the roads that dirt is just that always gonna go through. I've been in West Virginia for the summers. I'm from New York, but I go down there. My grandmother would put us to work in the back. I learned how to use all the sickle and stuff like that to cut weeds, things they don't even use anymore. So I appreciate the work that you guys put in. You know what I'm saying? And I'm glad and appreciative that you decided to do our stuff.
I tell the young people to do your homework. Don't just walk in head first and get your neck chopped off, you know. Go
there
in knowing what you're dealing with and what you want out of it, not what somebody else wants for you and your career. It's your life, you know. And sometimes when we get in with these companies, they start making decisions on what they want you to do instead of what you do. Stay true to yourself and your craft. And live your life you know.
Okay.
Don't get sidetracked. Don't walk in the traps because, you know there's the good, the bad, and the ugly with the industry. Thank
right.
God, you know, that we're out. We didn't get caught up in the drug game. We didn't get caught up into, you know, anything that could hurt
right.
us. We just was living
right.
life. And as Angie went on, we supported Angie and Blondie and I support. And we're still sisters in this hip-hop game. And every now
go.
And then when people attack us, you'll see all three of us get on Facebook and go in. But, you know, it's because, you know, we're not going
yeah.
to step. Yeah, we're not going to step down out of our position.
That's it.
You know,
that's right.
As the first
that's
female
right.
rap group with an original rap record that sold 500,000 copies in 3 weeks, we're not.
Uh-huh.
And without social media, without any of the
mm-hmm.
other stuff that they got today,
yeah.
we're going
yeah.
to stay. We're going to stand our grounds, and we stand firm with that. For the other ladies out there that didn't get the opportunity to stand, you know, to get in the ring. They made contributions to their communities, and they have their
okay.
own set of fans in their communities. We were community a community group too. We did talent shows. We did everything that you know that was there for us to be able to platforms for us to step out there to say we want to do something, you know.
Right.
But you know, like I know, once you step into the professional arena and it becomes professional, that.
Mm.
Outside
yeah.
of you, just the state that you're living in, the whole world hear your music. So we're
right.
the first female rap group to
mm-hmm.
do what we
mm-hmm.
did in the history of hip hop.
And y'all did it, sir.
Yes.
Sir, I want to thank you again, and we want to welcome you back sometime in the future when
okay.
your movie of your life is being made and filmed. Okay, so we'll do an interview with you on the set. Okay, we'll be interviewing you on the set of your film.
You can call me anytime.
Thank you, Cheryl, and God bless you, sister.
God bless you.
You've been listening.
And thank y'all.
Thank you. You've been listening to Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop, Cheryl the Pearl from the group Sequence, Sugar Hill Records, one of the most iconic figures and really one of the most amazing discovery stories I've ever heard in the history of hip hop. Thank you. This is Disco Daddy. I'm out.
Hello. I'm Robin Lynn Maven, the CEO, creator, and producer of Vibes Live. We have over 2 million geographical listeners reaching 200 countries with nonstop music 24/7. Just tune in on VibesLive.com.
'Their Disco Daddy here. Welcome to a very special edition of Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. And today, if you've been with us all month, you know that we're honoring queens of hip hop culture. Women, sisters, mothers, friends who have been there from the beginning of hip hop, before any records were made. There were people out there laying the foundation. Many times our sisters are overlooked or their contribution is minimized. Well, we're not going to do that here at Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. We're going to let them tell their own stories. And there are many, many fascinating stories from the legends, the true legends, the people who made this foundation. Today we have a sister, Gail Hall, DJ Flame, formerly known as DJ La Spank, one of the female DJs who pioneered and broke down glass ceilings back in the day. And she's going to explain all of that and the progression of what it was like for the females. And the sisters trying to make it in a male-dominated, very heavily male-dominated new culture, which we now know as hip-hop. Queens of the Culture, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip-Hop. Gail, are you there, Miss Hall?
Yes, I am.
Beautiful.
How are you,
okay.
sir?
I'm fine. I'm honored that you would do my show. The first thing we do on every show, because the first lady of hip-hop, I coined that phrase for her, MC Sharon Sharrock Jackson, could not be here because of a project she's working on, but I did interview her earlier. I told her I'd give her a shout-out at the beginning of every interview because I want her presence to be felt with all of the other queens that we're honoring this month. okay, oh, and I know you're all friends. Right, mm-hmm. I know you're all friends, okay? She speaks highly of everybody. In fact, she said during the interview that she'd rather have you ladies tell your stories because you're always overlooked, basically. You see what I'm saying? But I found fascinating knowledge from all of you ladies, and I've been interviewing you all month long, and I'm ready to hear your story, and so is the world. And I may ask you some questions that you might have talked about a lot of times, but I tell all of my guests from New York, you guys grow up together, you all know each other, many of the stories you have around, but when you step outside of New York, nobody knows anything that you're talking about. Coke, Lil Rock, DJ Herc, you understand what I'm saying? These are names that are known in hip-hop if you're hardcore, but once you step out of New York City, everything that you say on our show is revelations to our audience. So I hate to be, you know, ask you something you've been asked 1,000 times, but just be prepared in case that happens. Chris Hall, DJ Flame, start with your early life, your early career. What led you into hip-hop or DJing? Was it hip-hop first or DJing, or DJing first and then hip-hop? Dale Hall.
Wow. That was a mouthful. Well, first I want to...
Again, most of my people don't know anything. Got to really lay it out for the Los Angeles audience what we're trying to do here. Okay, go ahead, man.
Not a problem. First, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to be asked by you, sir, to actually tell my story, because I find, like you said earlier, that people want to tell my story, and then when I try to correct my story, they want to shut me down. So I thank you for the opportunity. And the next thing I wanted to do is shout out my homegirl, Shireezy, which is a.k.a. Shirock. That's my girl. I mean, we grew up together. We've known each other since we were teens. You know,
wow.
We went to the same high
school.
Call
after the interview. Tell her I'm keeping my word. We giving her the shout. Okay, let her know I'm on it. You know.
They used to do. I used to bang out beats on the table in the lunchroom when she was, you know, yeah. We go way back. Okay.
What high school was that?
We went to Evander Childs High School in the
Evander
Bronx.
Evander Childs, okay.
Evander.
Right.
So how did I get started?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was 13, and my mom, she worked nights. She was a single mom, and I had two brothers, and they were 8 and 11 years older than me. So there was a big gap between, you know, what they were doing and what I was doing. And I, you know, I was exposed to music because, you know, my mom, she loved music. We always played music in my house. I was like the DJ in the house because, you know, if you remember, I don't know if you guys, well, I know you remember, but some of the people that maybe listen, they may not remember with the 45s and you had the cone and you would set up the
big
45.
Old spindle, yeah.
Yes, and you would set it up and you would put the records in a certain order because you knew that was in that order with, you know, build to make them dance. Well, that was me.
And I would say to the art at the time.
Yeah, that was
when
me.
When you could put 6 on and it would go one after another without messing up, that was state of the art.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, you know, I kind of, you know, was into music. I used to sing. I started singing when I was 5. I didn't sing in the church. I wasn't in the traditional church. I was a Catholic, you know. We lived right across the street from the church. So it was more like, you know, my mom would look at us and go, you go to church, you know. And that whole culture, it was embedded in me, but... Mm. It was music. You know, I just love any forms of music. My mother, we would sit up and listen to, you know, John Coltrane and Miles Davis and Sammy Davis Jr., Jackie Gleason, you know. I mean, when I say Jackie Gleason, people are going to go, what? You know, yes, Jackie Gleason and the big bands. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. He did have bands. You're right. He produced
them.
Yep.
Yes, he did.
I'm on albums by him.
Yep. And, you know, I was just intrigued, you know, by that whole thing, you know, watching Dionne Warwick and, you know, just all those greats. And I would just you know, watch TV, and there would be Soul Train would come on, and then I can't remember okay, y'all gotta edit this. I got Alzheimer's. Okay, there was a program that would come on, and it was just geared for children, and they would be dancing, and different people would come on, and so forth. And so I was like, you know, I want to be in the entertainment. That was like, you know, all of that together, you know, in my mind, it was like, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. You know, my mom, she was by herself raising three kids, and she worked nights. And, you know, my moms was out there like most moms. They was trying to, you know, make a way, you know, and she had friends and buddies, you know, they would, you know, be in a number hole, and, you know, they try their luck at, you know, the old-time lottery. Because lottery is
right.
Nothing but the numbers.
The number man. Yeah. I grew up in New York. I'm familiar with all that. Come by early in the morning, twice a day, actually.
Like one of her buddies was the co-owner of a club down the block from us, which was called Emma's Place, and she was actually Emma. So Emma and my mom were pretty tight. They were Panamanian. And black and
What year were we talking?
That's what messed me up the last time. I was
13. I gotta keep everything in order here because you might say something that ties in with this. It's about hip hop knowledge that you dropped, and you know, and I want to be clear because you might have been the only one that witnessed something or was part of that knows about it that's here on the radio talking about it.
Okay, so we're talking at that time. I was in. I had just got back from, so I'm thinking 75, 76, around time.
Okay.
And I would go there to, you know, I was being babysat, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I was being babysat in an after-hours club. Because my mother, I was 13, but I looked like I was 19. And my mother was like, you got a club.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you down there, and I know she going to run around here somewhere, and I'm out by myself. You know, she's home by herself, so I'd rather her be there. And she likes that music, so work with me. And Emma was like, you come in, you don't drink, you can be with the DJs, you can, you know, you can dance and everybody, you know, if anybody gets fresh, you know, you come to me, you know. So that was like kind of like my big mama or my auntie.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
And so I went in there.
Let me ask you something though. Now this is around this period where there are park jams and stuff going on yet? Because
I didn't know anything about park jams.
You didn't know anything about
I was uptown. I was uptown, and I was in junior high school at that time, and I had just
came back.
And you
never had no friends talking about going to this park jam or filling out an index card for you?
And I'm getting ready to tell you, because I went to private school, okay? I went to not parochial school. I went to, I don't know what they call these schools now, I forget the, you know what I'm talking about, these special schools that they have now. Right, I was up in Rhinebeck, New York. Okay. And I was in 5th and 6th grade in Rhinebeck, New York, and in 7th grade I was in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I went to Moravian Academy. So I was a sheltered person.
I got you.
Okay. So when I came back to the block, when I was where I was at, I was too black, and when I came back home, I was too white. Okay. The only niche that I knew that I could, you know, identify with, and I realized that other people were identified, was music. That was the only thing. I used to dance. I used to hustle. And the guy that used to be the DJ there, his name was Kenny Anderson, and he used to hustle with me. And I used to, you know, he said, I'm going to teach you this, you know. So he would teach me, and we would work together on that. Now, mind you, I'm a teenager. I'm in my 13, 14 years old. And I'm watching him DJ, and I'm like, wow. wow, this guy is awesome. Now, it was no hip-hop. I didn't hear about hip-hop. I wasn't exposed to hip-hop. I didn't know hip-hop. And then all
what was her name?
Huh? What was his
the,
name?
The one you were watching. You were watching a lady DJ?
No, it was a man DJing. His name was Kenny. Anderson.
Okay. Oh, yes. Kenny Anderson. Okay, that's the one you used to roll with you. Okay, I got you.
Right. So he was the DJ for Emma's Place. Okay,
right.
So Emma's Place was notorious after our spot. You're talking Nicky Barnes, all of that. I'm in the midst of all of that, and I don't know anything about any of that because I'm a
right.
little girl, and I'm
right.
being babysat by Auntie Emma, okay? So
mm-hmm.
I and learning dance moves from the DJ. So I have no idea what I'm in the midst of, but I was protected, you know,
right.
and I was being trained up, and I didn't even know it. And all of a sudden, a guy walks in, and he gets on the microphone, and he starts rapping. That was the first time that I was introduced to rap.
Did you see that? What year? What year was that again?
That was
74, 75?
Right. It was between 75, 76, that year.
Okay. Was he doing a rap like we know today, or was he doing nursery rhymes? Like some of my other guests said that before written raps, people in New York that did get behind microphones weren't doing written type made up rap.
I'm going to tell you who the rapper was that came in. It was Kool Kyle.
Oh, man.
It was Kool Kyle.
Kyle, okay.
Right. That was the rapper that came in, or I should say the MC that came in at Emma's, and him and Scotty, which was the brother / co-owner of Emma's, they used to argue all the time, and I used to go, Kenny, why do they argue so much? He was like, it's okay, you don't need to worry about that. Just sit there, don't worry about it. You know, and I just
that's my boy. He goes
yes.
way back. Me and him have talked extensively.
Kyle
is
the one who actually witnessed me become a DJ. Kyle,
wow.
It was Kyle and Kenny. Okay,
wow.
Kyle
okay.
would sit there and go, "Little girl, don't be touching them instruments. You don't know nothing about that. We don't want you breaking nothing back here." And I used to be, you know, I'm a little kid. I'm like, "Why you?
Right.
Don't tell me. I do what I want to do." You know, and they used to be cracking up. You know, they used to mess with me because I was a little kid. You know, so Kenny was like, one day, he was like, "You want to learn?" So I was like, "Yeah, I want to learn." So he started teaching me how to mix because he wasn't hip hop, he was a disco DJ, you know.
Right.
So he mixed music. Well, I'm saying disco, but you know, really wasn't disco because it was, you know, classic soul. You know what I mean? It was, you know, you would play Lenny Williams. You know that time of the night when everybody want
right.
to before they leave. You know they want to get
mix
they,
it up
you know,
a little bit.
Right. You know, I see you from across the room. We gonna dance before we leave. You know that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so, you know all the type of music that I was exposed to was basically there because there was music that I was hearing there that I wasn't hearing at home. And I would go home and say, "Mommy, you gotta hear this song. I just heard this record." So I was kind of like the DJ of my house. But meanwhile, I was being taught by this DJ, Kenny Anderson, who was like, "Okay, look, you know, I'll show you how," you know, he would put the headphones on my head, let me listen to beats. Then, you know, he wouldn't let me mix. He would never let me mix, but he would show me and tell me as he was doing what he was doing, and then he would say, "This is what it sounds like when they're mixing together." And I was, you know, I'm a little kid. You know, this guy's like, you know, in his late teens, you know, 20s.
Right.
You know, he's a man as far as I'm concerned. So I'm sitting there going, "Wow," you know. And one day he said, I'm going over there to get a drink. I want you to mix that song for me because the song is almost over. I want you to mix it." I was like, I can't do that. And then here come Kyle. "You know you can't let that girl. She going to break something. And Scotty going, he going to kick us all out of here. Man, you crazy." He was like, come on. I said, "But you here." He said, "You can do this." I said, "I can't do that." He said, you do it. I said, "Because you right there. That don't mean that I can do it." And he said, "No problem." This I knew it was the setup because he got the drink, hit the bartenders, and everybody was sitting at the bar watching me because it was a big glass. So I'm like looking and I'm going, oh my God, he set me up. He got to watch me. I don't know what to do. And so I just, at that time, I just, you know, I blocked everybody and everything out of my mind, and I said, I'm going to do this. Now, you would have thought that, you know, that I had to switch, the nuclear warhead, you know, and the way I was acting. But for me, that was huge, you know, for me to get on that turntable, and it was a club. It wasn't somebody's house or somebody's basement. It was a club where the club owner was crazy, and he cuss you out in a minute. So I was just like, oh, God. And so I did it. And they all started clapping, and even Kyle looked and was like, all right, you did good, kid. All right. Move aside. Let me get the mic for you. You know what I'm saying? And every week he would have me do something, and then I wound up saying, I want to get my own group together. Kyle was like, oh, she bugging now. Then she tripping. She want to get her own group. And then I started hearing about hip-hop then because, of course, I heard Kyle. So now I'm looking for that sound. The Emma's place was right around from T Connection. So I realized the same sound that I was hearing coming out of Kyle was the same sound that was coming out of the T Connection upstairs. So I was like, wait a minute. Do you know those people upstairs you be going? He said, yeah, when I leave there, I come down here, and that's when I MC down here. I said, could you take me? He said, nah, you too young. They ain't going to let you in there. He said, you're a little girl. You're not 18. I was like, do I look like I'm 18? He said, don't matter. And at that time, you know, they wasn't showing IDs or anything, but Richie T, he was no joke. He was like, he didn't care. He was no joke. And so one day, I just said, I'm going. You know, I'm going to go up there. And I got myself together. And I had already been in that building because I had been in a band, and one of my band members had brought me up there, and they was having a rehearsal for another event. So I already knew what the place looked like, but I just never saw it up there. And at that time, there was no hip-hop. Well, at the time that I initially went there, when they had bands and stuff up there, they didn't have hip-hop. Richard T was not having hip-hop at all up at the T Connection. And I didn't understand the story until after I was already in hip-hop. And then it dawned on me, okay, yes, there was never any hip-hop. I never heard that sound coming out, you know, until after I met Kyle. So I started hearing, you know, different people. When I went to school, then I'm like going, I met, you know, Charlie Rock. I grew up with Charlie Rock. So I asked him, I was like, do you know about this? Do you know Kyle? He was like, yeah, I know Kyle. He was like, you know Emmis? He was like, you be at Emmis? Because he couldn't, you know, he couldn't hang at Emmis. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. His dad or whatever. He going to kill me, but okay. I said it. So, edit that. No. So, you know, he was a B-boy. So now I'm sitting up there, and I'm like awakening myself to the culture because I've been away for so long in this controlled environment. You know, which I was being groomed to be a doctor, a lawyer, a professional, and then I come back home, and you know, it's like I'm just seeing all of this around me, and it's just like, oh my God, I'm young, and I'm like a sponge, so I'm soaking it all up. So now I'm learning how to, you know, B-boy dance, how to be a B-boy, Seti. I don't know if you know Seti, but Seti grew up in our Cedric Ingram, he grew up in Gun Hill as well. So now you had the Black Spades. You had Intercrime. Well, Intercrime used to be up in Edenwall, but they would come down every so often. But you had Savage Nomads, Savage Skulls, you know, different people would frequent Gun Hill. So now seeing these boxes that they're carrying, and I'm like, okay, that's that music, that's that thing, that's okay, that's that sound. I'm not seeing a block party, you know. The only block party I know was Gun Hill Day, and it was a totally different day than what we see, you know, today, and hip hop or whatever. And so you know, that's kind of like how I broke into it. But I went into, I was in junior high school 135, and I met up with, Sweet and Sour, and then at the Emma's place, I met up with Jazzy Jean. Now, at the time, I'm not sure if Sweet and Sour was with Herc and Herculoids
right
before me, but I know that, and I don't know if you saw that picture on my Facebook, but you see a picture of me and two girls, me in the middle and two girls, and I'm hugging them, and we're in Emma's place on my birthday party for our debut as a female
right.
group. So that was before Mercedes Ladies.
Okay.
So most people think that my, you know, interaction with hip hop or being a part of a group, you know, of females started with Mercedes Ladies, but it did not. It started with me saying I wanted my own group. I mean, I was designing, you know, the vests and, you know,
right.
we were going to be classy and, you know, Kyle will tell you. He was, like, cracking up because he knew all of us, so he was loving it. He was loving that
mm-hmm.
we was doing that. But it wasn't something that we took outside of Emma's. Like, I was like, bring that outside of Emma's. Like, where would I bring it? Because I was,
mm-hmm.
I was not exposed to the park gyms. So I was exposed to the clubs before I was exposed to the park.
Okay,
because... You know what I'm saying? So I came in on a totally different, you know, whim. Like, when I started seeing park jams, I was already in Mercedes Ladies. And I was sitting there going, wow, whoa, do you see how many people are here? We go DJ in front of these people? You know, so I was just like,
wow.
I couldn't. It was crazy for me. And I didn't
okay.
even know what I was getting into
wow.
until I was already into it. So... I don't know if that
okay, what was it like for the ladies? Well, you just had experience with the club, so you didn't have to travel around or anything like that. But so now when records came in and they started making recordings, were you ever approached to do that or have the urge to cross over into that?
Well, I would say this is a big gap from the question you're asking me, because I didn't meet up with Mercedes Ladies until Baby D, and that was in 79. I always say 78, but it's 79, is when
okay.
I joined a group. There was a brother in the Blackface named Dynamite, and his cousin, I knew his cousin, and Baby D knew his cousin. I didn't know Baby D at the time, and he invited me to come over to his house to, you know, play some music. So I was like, cool, because he had saw me, he had heard about me at Emma's, and he was like, I got to see this for myself, female DJ.
Right.
And so I was mixing, and he was like, dang, you can mix. And next thing I know, I looked up, and I saw this girl standing in the middle of the in the middle of the living room with her mouth open looking at me like, and then he was like, who is she? That's what kids, she just kept asking him, who is she? And he said, that's LaSpank. And he said, you don't know LaSpank? And she was like, no. She was like, oh, my gosh, she is another one. She mixes? Oh, I got to talk to her. And so the next thing I know, I get off, and I turn around, and I see her. She's on the turntable, and she's cutting and scratching. And I'm like, who is she? You know, like, we had the same reaction to each other. And we were like kindred spirits. I mean, that was, like, it. You know, that was like sisters for life. And then she was like, yo, I got this group. You know, it's another females. I said, wait a minute, there's other females like you? And she was like, yes, and we got a group. And I want you to be in our group. And I was like, well, yeah. All the females like you? And do they rap? And they do. I mean, she wasn't rapping at the time. I didn't hear her rap. But I knew that from Kyle that there was rap involved. You know what
okay.
I mean? So I was like, do they rap and all of that stuff? She was like, yes, and I want you to come down, you know, to the rehearsal space. And so I went down to the rehearsal space, and I met her, and I walked into this apartment on the first floor of 168th Street and Franklin Avenue, and I turned around, and I saw Grand Wizard Theodore. He was there.
Wow.
Busy B was there. it was, I think Ruby D was there. I think, yeah, it was Ruby D at the time. He was there. And now I didn't know any. Mind you, I knew none of them, okay?
Right.
I knew none of their, who they were, what they did, what they started. I knew nothing. I just knew Baby D, you know, and she wanted me to be in her group. So I walked in there. And, of course, the rest of them Saisleys was there, and the manager, which was Trevor. And then I found out that Trevor was a manager not only for Mercedes Ladies but for the L Brothers. So we were like the sister group to the L Brothers. But music, coming to wax, like I was so caught up into, you know, wanting us to do part jams and, you know, now I'm going to events. Now I'm up in T-Connection. And, you know, and I wound up actually – becoming a part of the establishment of T-Connection because I was one of the house DJs, MCs, and the only female. So Kyle was like a resident MC. I was a resident DJ MC, and there were no other females that were able to do that, accomplish that. You know, and so that's all I'm thinking about was, you know, where's the next gig? And then when I heard Sha-Rock and them, you know, when they came out, we were like, you know, it was like we heard them on the radio, it was like us on the radio, you know what I mean? Because everyone had told us like, oh, that's a fad, that's nothing, that's garbage music, what are you doing, you know, it'll never last, this, that, the other. And so to hear that the routines that we were, you know, seeing, to actually hear it on the radio. I mean, we heard mixtapes, you know, we was in OJ's and, you know, that was a big thing. You know, you get in the cab and hear your mixtape, you know, you've arrived. But to actually be on the radio, you know, that was, you know, you have arrived, you know. And so that was Sha-Rock and the Funky Four plus, and she was the plus one, of course. And, you know, then we started hearing other people do it. But by that time, we weren't really a cohesive group by that time, you know.
Right.
I believe, you know, they were approached. You know, I was the last one to come in, so I was always, you know, I always didn't feel really a part of the group. The only person that really, you know, I had a real tie to was Baby D, you know. And so when we lost, when Trevor, I don't know if I should say that, but when Trevor was no longer our manager and we had no access to equipment, then, you know, we had acquired other management, and it wasn't something that was voted on. It was just something that was kind of thrown upon us. And so I wasn't really feeling the direction, you know, that we were going, and I just felt like it was off. But then I didn't know the industry, you know, if you will, you know, because none of us knew the industry. But, you know, when I'm, you know, now that I'm looking at it, you know, as an adult, I didn't know the industry and I didn't know anything. So, you know, the moves that this person was making might have been the moves that needed to be made in that day and time.
At that time,
but but I just didn't feel them. I just didn't feel that those moves were appropriate. And I thought that it potentially put us in danger, you know, as females, you know.
Right.
I came, again, I'm thinking, you know, I'm coming from a total different mindset because I'm coming from private school. My whole family is law enforcement. So I came up in a law enforcement household, you know. So I'm always thinking about, you know, what is your position? Where are you situated in this situation? And what is the, you know, what is the potential danger, the harm? Because that's the way I grew up thinking. You know, and so I applied that into all areas of my life, and I just felt that was, it just wasn't for me. And so at one point, Baby D left the group, and then they was like, well, she's gonna take Baby D's place, and I'm looking at them like, I can't take Baby D's place, you know, she's the one that brought me in here, you know, how am I taking her place, you know, and I mean, it just didn't work well, and then I left, and then I came back, and then Baby D came back, and then she left, and then, you know, it was just kind of crazy. It was really crazy, and you know, you had other members that left too, but like I said, it wasn't, you know, the foundation. You know, once the manager left, you know, it was difficult. And you had six personalities, and you had, you know, and I'll bring it in the perspective of a cheerleading squad. Like you have the cheerleading squad that goes on the field, and then you have the boosters. You know, so now we're not only the six main characters, but now we've got a whole crew of females behind us. That when we go to park jams and we go to parties, they're screaming out Mercedes ladies, and they would be rocking T-shirts, and you know. But if we had any inkling of what we know now, we probably would have been multi-trillionaires by now, because we could have like made, you know, those shirts could have been ours. We could have been selling them, you know, the merchandising, the name, you know. But we were just kids. You know,
hindsight of 2020.
Yeah, you know.
Okay. So let's fast forward. We got a few minutes left. The Mercedes ladies are still basically around. We're telling their story, and it was really a fascinating time because you were there just before records, and then the period when they came in and sort of changed the game. And what are you doing now? Beck, you're on the air, I understand. Why don't you lay out for us now what the program is and how that's working out for you, and if that's what you actually basically really love doing.
I'm just confused because I know that is the interview contained to Mercedes Ladies?
No. We were talking about your career and your interaction with them.
I'll make this real. I didn't know how much time we had, but I'll make it real quick. I went from Mercedes Ladies to Inner City Disco, which they recruited me, and I met them because they actually came to battle Mercedes Ladies at T Connection while I was with Mercedes Ladies.
Was that in the Bronx or in Harlem?
That was in the Bronx at T Connection.
Okay.
And Richie T was the one who actually set that up. Because we didn't even know about Inner City Disco. And he knew about them and said, I'm going to get them to, you know. Richie liked to stir the pot. He's something.
Right.
But gotcha. It was a good thing because now we saw that there was another group. But Inner City Disco was not an all-female group. They had a lot of females and DJs in their group. But there were guys in the group as well. But they had a female squad. So they would send the female squad out to deal with females, you know.
Okay.
And so that was in Queens. So I was in Left Rock City. They were both based in Left Rock City. So I started coming out to Left Rock City.
And what year were you doing that? What year did that progression happen with the you traveling?
We're talking like 81, 82, maybe.
Okay, this was well after records then. Okay.
Yeah, we were definitely, by then, Spoonie G, everybody, we was playing everybody's records. You know, did we aspire? We probably could have, if we had the right management, Mercedes Ladies, we probably could have been a part of a legacy of Wax. And from what I understand, they went on later on to do that with B-Fats. I understand they did backgrounds or whatever with them, and
we talked to Sherry. Sure, they did have it interesting. That's why each one of you have a different slice of the pie to tell. You see what I'm saying? That's why I let you tell your story, because I can see now how you fit in the dynamics of the group, people leaving and coming and going, and the changing time. You guys are caught up in the whirlwind. It was changing from just the clubs to records now. Record deals are out there.
Right.
Male domination was always present, but you had bought yourself a place, and then things started falling apart for reasons outside your control. Your producer or manager making decisions for you that you can look back now and say that was messed up.
If we could have maybe come together, but you know, females. I mean, someone had asked me, do you feel that you know your group, you know, had experience the curse of the female group? And I would say yes, because, you know, it happened to the Supremes, it happened to, you know what I mean, Donna Ross. I mean, it's just something about, you know, girl groups, you know, they just have a problem in consistency, you know, and, you know, there's always, you know, things interchanging, because even when we were in Inner City Disco, you know, I hooked up with Lady Sweet, because she was the one that recruited me for Inner City Disco. And then we wound up being a duo. So we started doing, like, you know, New York City NYCHA, you know, New York City Housing Authority talent shows and stuff like that. You know, so we started doing stuff, opening for Cool Moe Dee and them and skating rinks and things like that. But then by that time, I was a suit. I was on Wall Street. I used to work for E.F. Hutton. You know, I used to work in personnel, so I'm like...
had to pay bills and everything else.
I'm married, you know, so I'm like, I can't do this because this is not making money. It's not making sense for me. And, you know, I love to do it. And even now, you know, for me to come, you know, and you know, I was, you know, my story is crazy because, the last thing I would ever think that I would be, you know, a gospel DJ. But that's what I am, you know.
Well, tell us about that
right
now.
I'm still a DJ. Okay,
tell us about that, how you got into that. We got about 3 or 4 minutes left.
Okay, real quick, you know, got saved, was in Zulu Nation. I used to be the head Zulu Queen in Zulu Nation. I sat on the World Council. I used to manage my ex-husband with Hot 97, True School at Noon at Hot 97, Bam and all of them came, and then, you know, the Lord was just like, I need you to DJ. And I was like, you mean him? I'm not, you know, I hadn't DJed in, you know, years. I was like, I'm not doing that. That's him, you know. And, you know, one thing led to another. Next thing I know, I surrendered. I said, okay, Lord, that's what I'll do. And, you know, I had been looking for work, and the first job I had, I was on WWRL playing gospel as a board op. I couldn't open up the mic, but I was in training, you know, getting paid, getting a check.
Wow,
I couldn't believe it, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, God, you're awesome. You know, okay, what else you need me to do? Because, you know, this is pretty cool, you know. And then he was like, I need you to start doing events. I was like, events? And he was like, this, and I worked with Al Pizarro. I used to work with, I don't know if people know who Al Pizarro is, but, you know, VIP Record Pool.
Okay.
You know, VIP Record Pool was Al Pizarro, and he had accounts such as Kirk Franklin, Gospel Gangsters, and he would just look at me and say, you got the accounts, and they were Interscope accounts. And I was just like, I don't know what to do with this. He said, do what you would normally do if you wasn't in gospel. I said, okay. And so I started promoting as a regular, you know, not even with the mindset of gospel. And they blew up, you know, Trinity 5-7, Gospel Gangsters, God's Property, and Kirk Franklin, God's Property. Those were our 3 projects. And we're the ones that brought them to New York and, you know, in VIP Record Pool, and they broke, like, records, like, we won't even say anymore. You already know, you know, about Kirk Franklin. Yeah. But then I wound up coming into radio. You know, I left. I went to, you know, WFDU. I was there, and, you know, I wound up, my show wound up to be the top show of all the gospel shows. I had 37,000 listeners within a 15-minute increment, and they just was blown away. And God closed that door and opened the door for me to be here in Harlem at WACR 90.3 FM. And I've been here for the last 11 years doing the anointed mic check. And this is where we take Beats Back for Jesus. And, you know, we bring you the best in urban gospel music. I mean, I've done a whole lot of other things in between, but, you know, we just do radio. And, you know, I've managed some artists, gospel artists, and, you know, headed up some divisions as far as holy hip-hop, you know, in New York. And I've been approached to create the timeline for the Hip-Hop Hall of Fame Museum for Holy Hip-Hop. So I'll be working on that project as well. So, you know, and God is good.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you, Gail Hall, DJ Flame. And your contribution to hip-hop is immeasurable. The knowledge that you have, we could talk to you for hours, just like all my guests. You know what I'm saying? Are you planning any books or anything like that where you could be more elaborative on your stuff?
You know, I don't know if you know Gerard Henry. He used to do a program on BET called Lift Every Voice, Sway. All these guys was like, you need to write a book.
Okay.
Like, I don't have time to
write
a book.
You got the knowledge. You have stories. But we want to thank you.
I think I'll do the documentary before the book because, it's a lot.
It's a little easier because the book will consume you. You're going to be working for a couple of years probably.
Yeah.
We want to thank you.
I want to thank you for your contribution. I want to thank you and what you're doing. And this is amazing that you put people together. And I hope you edit.
Thank you. Thank you. No, we want this now to be out there. So there's no thing in the future. I was misquoted. Okay, first we want people to hear the story from the horse's mouth. No straight analogy to you.
Well, at least I got the timeline right. At least I got it right this time. Because the last time we was on the phone, like I kept saying 78, and D was texting me, no, 79. I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I have that moment.
I have moments like that, too. That's that A-G-E, so don't worry about it.
Look, I got old homies, man.
We love you. We love you. You're still here. God has a purpose for you because that's why you wake up every morning. You do your gospel thing, spreading the word out there, positive. And we want to thank you for your contribution to hip-hop. You're truly a queen of our culture. And stay on the phone when this ends so my producer can get the address. We're mailing all the queens a gold embossed letter of recognition suitable for framing, okay? And the week your interview airs, it'll be a picture of you with your honor right beside you so everybody can see what's happening, how we're honoring our queens, okay?
Wow.
We love you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I'm praying that God will continue to bless you and your team and just enlarge and expand your territory as you continue to just flourish and grow and do the things that God has called you to do. I pray that prayer in Jesus' name for you.
I need that blessing. Thank you very much. Dale Hall, DJ Flame on Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop. Stay with us all September as we honor the queens of our culture. They truly are. Peace.
Peace.
So wasn't it a great show? Come back next week, every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Central Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Disco Daddy's Wide World of Hip Hop Show. Man, it's a great one. Epic, epic. See you next week. Bye.